You're listening to a sermon from Sojourn East.
Our scripture reading this morning, it comes from Luke 16, verses 1 through 13. And if you are able, would you please stand for the reading of God's word? Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and he asked him, 'What's this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you can't be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'Oh, what shall I do now? My master has taken away my job, and I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each of his master's debtors, and he asked the first one, 'How much do you owe my master?' 900 gallons of olive oil, the man said. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. And then he asked the second, "And how much do you owe?" 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told that one, "Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. And for the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves so that when it's gone, you'll be welcome into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little can also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who'll give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated.
Well, good morning. Peace be with you. Excuse me. If you're visiting with us today, my name is Kevin, and I serve as the lead pastor here. And I want to know that we're really grateful that you have joined us this morning. Before we get into this fascinating parable of Jesus, I would like to pray and invite you to pray with me. Father, you're a good God, and you haven't left us to our own devices here, but you've given us your Son, you've given us your Word. And so I pray this morning, as we come to this passage, that you would give us eyes to see the truth it contains, that you would give us hearts that wouldn't turn into stones when there's things in here that might really challenge us or pierce us, but instead you'd give us a receptivity. Make us receptive to the work of your Spirit among us. We ask these things in your Son's name. Amen. I got to tell you, I love this parable. It's one of my favorites. But it's one that has challenged Christians throughout the years. And I know Scott just read it for us. Let me just retell it rather quickly so that we understand exactly what is happening here. It's a story about a wealthy man who discovers that his asset manager has been misappropriating funds. So he calls him in and he terminates him on the spot. And he says, "I want you to go balance the books and then bring them back to me." And the man, you know, these are smaller communities back then. He knows that his reputation's shot and he's not going to be able to find a job being a bookkeeper anywhere else after this. And he also knows he's too old to dig and too proud to beg. So he feels the gravity of this moment. He's losing his job. He better do something. And then he has a light bulb go off in his head. And he calls in, sets up appointments with all of his boss's debtors. The first one comes in and he says, "Hey, how much," he's looking at his ledger, "how much do you have in debt to my master? Like, what do you have down?" And the first one says, "I have 900 gallons of olive oil." That's an incredible amount of olive oil, right? It's 3 years' wages. And he's like, 900. Huh, because down here it says you only have 450, you know, gives him a wink. Oh, okay. Next guy, "How much do you owe my master?" "What is it, 1,000 bushels of wheat?" It's like, huh, That's 10 years' wages. He says, it seems there's been an accounting error in your favor because all I have written down is 800 bushels of wheat. And we're given the impression that he just continues down the list of all of his boss's debtors, hoping and assuming that when he does get terminated and he's out on the street, all of a sudden he's got some people that he has made friends with. And that if he is in need, he'll be able to call them because they will remember the favors he had done for them. Well, it's not long before word of his actions get back to his boss. And this is where the story takes such an unexpected turn. Because the boss doesn't say, how dare you, and berate him. Nor does the boss call the authorities and press charges. Instead, the boss praises the man. This has really confused Christians over the years, and some people try to come up with these explanations. Well, actually, what he was forgiving in the debts was his own commission, but that doesn't make sense. There are such drastic different amounts. Others say, well, it was the unfair finance charges that the master was charging, and he was getting rid of them. That doesn't make sense either, because in the parable, after he does all these things, Jesus says, no, he's a dishonest manager. Like, he doesn't say, you know, he's dishonest. And so we read this, and this guy is shady as can be, and yet Jesus says, I want you in a way to become more like him. Well, what's he getting at? We got to pay close attention to verse 8. The master doesn't commend the manager for ripping him off. The master commends him for the way he did it. The master doesn't commend him for being dishonest, but instead the master commended him, says, because he had acted shrewdly. Now, shrewdness is not something we talk about a lot. We don't use that word often in our conversation, but shrewdness is a combination of intelligence and foresight, ingenuity, and resourcefulness. It's like having this ability to like know what's coming and stay a few moves ahead. So if you think in literature, movies, like classic examples would be Sherlock Holmes is a shrewd person. Hermione Granger's shrewd. Tony Stark, Iron Man, you know, Katniss Everdeen. These are all these shrewd characters who are able to kind of see what was coming and prepare themselves, respond accordingly. And what Jesus says in the second half of verse 8, and he's talking to his disciples here, and that's really important. He's not talking to the Pharisees or to tax collectors. It's his disciples. He says to them, the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. The people of this world are more shrewd, more resourceful and creative and clever and tenacious in pursuing things of this world, success or promotions, than are the people of the light at pursuing the things of God, is what Jesus is saying. He's commenting on the fact that here on earth, when there are material things that we want, we can be very creative and tenacious in pursuing it, but we don't always bring that same creativity and tenacity to our spiritual lives and spiritual pursuits. You know, as human beings, when there's something we want, we tend to find a way to get it, do we not? And I was talking with my wife this week, we were laughing. In 2007, we were about 3 years into our marriage, and we were in the beginning stages of planting a church in Ohio, and we were completely broke. I mean, we were dirt poor. We lived in a very small 900 square foot house, which was wonderful, but it was tiny. And our church plant, we needed someone who could lead worship. And so we hired my friend Jonas H., who's actually now the lead pastor of Sojourn New Albany, to be our worship leader. I think we paid him like $300 a month. And part of the package is he was allowed to live in the spare bedroom in our 900 square foot house. To be young and dumb and not realize the consequences of decisions. It's God's grace that Jonah and I are still good friends to this day. But it was during that time that the first iPhone was announced. And we watched, you know, the unveiling, and for both of us, it was love at first sight. It was like, this changes everything. But it also cost $500. Like, how? We don't have $500. Like, that might have been, that was back when $500 was a lot of money, you know? Like, it's a joke on inflation. Like, it was a lot, it was like $500. That was like a mortgage payment. And so, you know what we did? We started figuring it out. Sold some things on eBay. Went through our list of books. Like, which ones do I not really care? Sold them on Amazon. I literally, my wife came in one time and I'm like, in the couch, like, I'm not exaggerating, going through, collecting the coins, because back then people used to carry real money around, and I was like, collecting it all. And she was like, you are shameless. And I was like, we have to get it. We got to get it. And I'm like, we'll eat nothing but canned food for the next month if that's what it takes. And so on the day it was released, two guys whose combined income was at the poverty line walked into an Apple store and walked out with two brand new first-gen iPhones. It was foolish, absolutely ridiculous looking back. I'm like, what were we thinking? But it proves my point. That when we really want something as human beings, we tend to find a way. And what Jesus is saying is, while we hustle and scheme in pursuit of earthly things, when it comes to the things of God, the people of God often slip into what I would call a pious passivity. And what I mean is like, well, I want to obey Jesus, and I want to believe in him, and I want to read his word, all good things. But then we kind of stop there because we think that's the essence of discipleship. And Jesus wants to challenge that. He wants us to think deeply and creatively about how we can leverage what we have for his kingdom purposes. Our time, our vocations, our intelligence, our trainings, our connections, our relationships, and especially in this parable, our money. How can we leverage it, get creative with it for kingdom purposes? That's the meaning of verse 9. He says, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Use what you have here for my kingdom. And it, just to be clear, because it is a little confusing, Jesus is not saying you can buy your way into heaven here. What he's saying is you can leverage your wealth in light of the future that he is bringing. He wants us to live the entirety of our lives before his face, including how we use what we have. And I mean, that's the mission that we're driving for here at Sojourn East. Our mission is to guide people into the fullness of life that Jesus offers. We don't want you to just believe certain things or attend certain things. We want you to bring the entirety of who you are before God and let God transform you and grow you and deepen you. And that being said, we all have different gifts and resources. And so this creative, shrewd way of stewarding what we have, it's going to look different for all of us, which means I can't really offer like 7 steps to shrewd stewardship. But what I can do is zoom out, look at the text and say, okay, what in here, how does what's in here kind of train our minds and our thinking to become shrewd stewards? And I got 3 things I want to highlight. The first one, this parable, it encourages us to remember the brevity of life. You know, once you understand, you like get over the kind of moral qualms you have, the parable itself is actually quite simple. A man gets a glimpse into his future and it changes how he lives in the present. He gets a window into what's coming, and then he adjusts accordingly. I mean, imagine if tomorrow you are going through your inbox and you find you've accidentally been CC'd on an email from your boss or supervisor that was not meant for you, that contained a list of employees who were going to be laid off at the end of this upcoming week. As you're going through, you find out your name's on the list, which is a real bummer because you love your job, you feel like you're good at it, but you also know if your name's on this list and it's gone out to, like, you're done. Put yourself in that position. My guess is, after seeing your name on the list, you wouldn't continue to go about your day like business as usual. Like that piece of information about what is coming for you would radically change how you live out your day tomorrow. You would make calls to friends and business contacts. You'd update your LinkedIn profile. You might get into the family budget and start saying, okay, what cuts can we make? What cuts can we not make? You know, if we could only get a glimpse into our future, it would radically change how we live in the present. And what Jesus is saying here is that we can know what the future holds for us. Because a day of reckoning is coming. When, like this manager, we too, we're going to lose not just our jobs, but we're going to lose everything we hold dear. We're going to lose our homes, our wealth, our possessions. We're going to lose everything down to the beat in our heart and the breath in our lungs. Because everything that we have on this earth is on loan from God. And one day he is going to collect it all back from us. And on that day, we're going to have to stand before him and give an account for how we stewarded all of these gifts that he's given us. And I know we live in a culture that does not want to talk about or think about death, that doesn't want to think about our mortality. But Jesus is saying, if you want to be wise and shrewd, wisdom comes not from neglecting reality, but from acknowledging it and then adjusting according to it. And Jesus says, the reality of our mortality and the reality of a day of reckoning should shape and reshape how we think about and handle money. Jesus told a number of parables about money. Every single one, you know what they all had in common? The theme of judgment. We looked at one a few months ago, Luke 12, when we were earlier in Luke, about a rich man who has an incredible harvest, and he's got way more crops than he knows what to do with. And instead of saying, hey, how could I help people? He says, oh, I know, I'm going to build bigger barns, and then I won't have to think about money again. And Jesus says, you're a fool. Judgment's coming tonight. You're going to die. Think about the parable of the talents. People are given talents and they're expected to do something with them. And how does the parable end? The master who entrusted the talents to his servants comes back and asks them to give an account. Think about the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, which Pastor Jonathan is going to do a wonderful job preaching on next week. It's a very challenging parable. It's actually the other side. It's after the judgment has occurred in light of how wealth was stewarded. Why? Why is Jesus always connecting money and judgment? It's not to try to scare you into giving more money to the church. Because it's not who Jesus is. It's Jesus saying, friends, I know how this all ends. Like, I have a purpose that I am achieving in this world, and I want your life and your stewardship to align with the future reality that I am bringing. And so number one, if we're going to be shrewd stewards, we got to remember that life is a loaner. And everything in it. And it's short. And that should give us perspective on how we think about stuff. So remember the brevity of life. The second thing we can draw from this text is to recognize both the limits and the possibility of money. The limits and the possibilities. What do I mean? Verse 9. Read it again. I tell you, he says worldly wealth. Some of your translations might say unrighteous wealth. He's not talking about money that you got through, you know, shady dealings. He's actually just talking about money. And he calls it worldly and unrighteous, not because it's sinful, but because it's a part of the order of this fallen world at this present time. In the new heavens and the new earth, there will not be money. Money is a necessity that emerged out of the fall because we live in a fallen world. And so Jesus says it's worldly, and then he also says it's fleeting, because he says, he doesn't say like if it goes, if your wealth someday goes, he says when it goes. And from Jesus's perspective, and again, this is littered throughout his teachings, whenever he talks about money, he kind of makes it clear that from his vantage point, there aren't really any good material investments here on earth. And the reason why is because this world in its present state is passing away. And if you think about it, every material thing, every object that we buy, at some point is eventually going to end up in the dirt. Like everything, landfill, or maybe a, you know, recycling plant in China or something, but eventually it's going to find its way into the dirt. That doesn't mean material things are bad. Doesn't mean we shouldn't enjoy the gifts of life. What it does mean is we should have some perspective that material things are not a great investment. Their worth is quite limited. And so you hear Jesus saying this, like money, it's limited, it's like a necessity in this world. It seems like he's got this really low view of money. But then he says that there's actually a way we can leverage our wealth here on earth to gain friends who will welcome us into eternal dwellings. And there's no exact agreement on who these friends are. Angels, God, other believers, people in heaven. No one knows exactly what Jesus is saying here except for him, it seems like. But it doesn't really change the point. The point Jesus is making is there is a way we can use our perishable wealth, our perishable money here, there is a way to invest it that we can reap eternal, imperishable rewards. That we can actually like funnel it through something in which the money we spend here on earth is actually, the way we use it here is going to have an impact on eternity. How? In a world where everything is perishing, what will last forever? Class? Anyone? People. People that were created in the image of God. People that God sent his son into the world not to condemn, but to rescue and to save. We live forever. That's the claim of the Bible. And therefore, if we want to make good investments with our wealth, the only really good lasting investment is an investment into other people. And Jesus, he's inviting us to leverage our wealth for the help of, to help and to serve others according to his purposes. He's not just calling us to be generous for generosity's sake. He's not calling us to throw money away. He's calling us to invest in people. And this should kind of reshape how we think about all of the calls he makes, because Jesus' teachings on money are tough. But this is what he's getting at. Everything else, it's fleeting. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's just not a great investment. Well, how do we invest in people? There's two big categories in the Bible. The first is the poor. Those who struggle to cover their basic needs. And sadly, just like everything else in our world today, caring for the poor has all of a sudden become a politicized thing. If you read the Bible, it's not a political thing, it's a biblical thing. It's not what my sermon's about, but I'll just give you one. Proverbs 19:17, whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. In Galatians, Paul says, we as God's people are to do good to all people, but we're also called to give special attention to those who belong to the household of faith. And so we can invest, leverage our money in meeting physical needs for all people, especially for Christians who are living in poverty. Now, there are ministries like Compassion International that do that. Very worthwhile investment. So the first category is the poor. And the second category is the poor in spirit. And the poor in spirit is all of us who are born into a world of sin, who choose sin and who struggle with sin and who are in need of a savior. Jesus says, you can leverage your wealth to support and advance his mission, in which he rescues us from our sin and from the kingdom of darkness, and he delivers us into the kingdom of light. And so practically, this looks like giving to healthy churches that preach the gospel and help people grow in spiritual maturity. This means giving to missionaries who are traversing the globe to share the gospel with people who've never heard. This means investing in ministries that serve specific people groups, like crisis pregnancy centers, or ministries to prisoners, or campus ministries. But Jesus, he doesn't want to just like give some money and like check the box and say, I did it. He wants us to actually be very thoughtful and creative. How can I best invest some of the money that he's entrusted to me to reach people? And I know talking about money in church is always a tricky thing. If you're visiting here with us, I can promise you, we can get a loud amen. I haven't preached a sermon on money in years, probably. If anything, like, I'm so sensitive to not want to badger people for money. And that's like so rooted in my story. My dad did not like Christians or the church. And he always would say, you know, all the church wants is to like beg you for money. And so he's been gone for years, but I'm still like trying to prove him wrong. Like, that's not what we are about, Dad. And so one area is you can talk about it too much and like beat people over the head and try to make them feel guilty. And the other area is you cannot talk about it enough. And that's probably my tendency, because really God doesn't need your money. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. And I want that to be abundantly clear. But the truth is, your generosity and how you handle money and your relationship with money is really important. Jesus talked about money more than any other topic. And the reason why is, again, it's not because he was broke. It's because he knows how powerful money is. And we know how powerful money can be. And I do want you to invest in the work that we're doing here. I believe in what we're doing here deeply. You know, the challenge in a big church is you can oftentimes miss the trees for the forest. You kind of see the big thing that's happening on Sunday and like, that was good, or that sermon wasn't great, or whatever it is. But it's easy to miss, just because there's too many people to actually know everyone, all of the ways that God moves in our church every single day. The lives that are changed, the people who cross over from death to life, the people whose marriages have been struggling for years and they reach out for help, and they get a new vision for their marriage and for their family, which will change an entire family and generation. And there are many of you who give very generously to the church. And I want to say thank you. Like, it means a lot. And we try to steward it wisely. And there are others of you who don't give. You've never really considered it. And I just want to say, what do you think about it? Would you consider investing here and investing in what we're doing? Here, what we're trying to do is what Jesus encourages, that leveraging this fleeting, perishable wealth, investing it in such a way that it will give us an imperishable return. And yet, I know generosity can be difficult, and that leads to the last and final point. Like, how do we become generous people who do leverage our wealth? Third point, final point from the text is, we need to entrust ourselves to the better master. Here's what I mean. 16:13, Jesus says, no servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. But you cannot serve both God and money. This is one of the stronger statements Jesus ever makes about money. You can't serve both God and money. But the word translated money there in other translations is probably, if you have like the King James, it's actually the word mammon. Anyone ever heard that word mammon before? So in the New Testament, money is a morally neutral thing. Money is the paper, the coins, you know, the objects that enable us to exchange goods and services. It's not evil, it's not good, it's just a tool. But mammon is different. The etymology of mammon means to put your trust in. And Jesus, when he talks about mammon, he often personifies mammon into a master or a ruler or even a god. And so when Jesus says you can't serve both God and money, he's saying you can't actually put your ultimate trust in both God and money. You certainly can't serve both, because there are times that money is going to ask you to do or not do things that God is going to call you to do or not do. It's a little confusing, sorry. Or God's going to call you to do some things that if you are serving the master of money, you're not going to do. He's not saying you're not allowed to serve them both. He's saying it's impossible. Like they're going in different directions. And the temptation we have is to serve mammon. And the reason why, I don't think it's so much because we all are just greedy and want to spend all of our money on ourselves. Sometimes it's true for some of us, and it's probably part of it. But I think so much of the reason we have such a troubled relationship with money is because it's really about trust and about safety. And I don't think I'm saying anything like controversial here. We all feel better the more money we have in the bank. And the less money you have in the bank, the more anxious you feel. And the Bible's clear. It's as nuanced. It's appropriate to save. Proverbs celebrate someone who leaves an inheritance for their children. But it's also true that we buy into the lie that if we just had a little bit more, then we would be safe. If we had just a little bit more money, then everything would be okay. And then we'll be generous, right? And then we'll start, like, once I've got myself safe, then I'll start leveraging my money for God's kingdom. And that's when it becomes clear that we're not serving God, we're serving mammon. Because mammon, it always says you always just need a little bit more. You know, the raise you're going to get this year, then things are going to be fine. But it's never enough. And we all know, I don't think this is controversial either, that when we serve the God of mammon, it does bad things to our souls. In contrast to when serving God, the fruit of the Spirit emerges: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. These wonderful Christ-like attributes. When we serve mammon, the fruit of mammon emerges in our life, right? It's greed, anxiety, unrest, envy, jealousy, despair. You see, we think it'll make it safe, but it can't do that. Because in the end, money is powerful. It can do a lot of things. You know, one thing it can't do is stop death or overcome death. But Jesus Christ did overcome death. And he overcame death to bring us into life with God. While mammon demands that you give your life in pursuit of it, you know, you overwork, you neglect your spouse, your children, you work until you're utterly exhausted, Jesus Christ, he's the one who gave his life for you. And he says, come to me, all you who are labor weary, and you'll find rest. He says, take my yoke upon you. He's not saying there's not a yoke or a call. He's saying, I'm inviting you into a radically different way of being in the world, one that is not, you know, characterized by just driving for more and accumulating more, but is instead, it begins and ends from a place of trust in the goodness of God, who did not spare his own son, and has promised to give us all things. And we know that in him, even though we're going to die, we're going to live forever. And when you know that, like when you know that you are safe in his kingdom and you are loved by God, you know what money becomes then? Money. A tool that you can use, you can leverage for something so much greater. Now, I think we've covered death. We've covered money. Any other topics, you know, that people were hoping we would talk about at church today? The last one I would say is greed in the Bible. It's a notoriously difficult thing to see in yourself, according to Jesus. Like, we think greedy people are those who drive nicer cars and live in nicer houses than us. Like, that's how we as human beings operate. The truth is, you can be really wealthy and not be greedy, and you can be very poor and be incredibly greedy. How do we know? How do we know if greed's something we really struggle with? Well, I'll give you one test. Like, one sure sign that you're serving mammon rather than God is that you're unable to give away money. You're unable to be generous. And this is just logical. Like, because if you can't give money away, that signifies that to give money away would be to betray what you value most. It doesn't make any sense. Like, if that's your goal in life, why would you give it away? Everything else serves that goal. Conversely, one of the undeniable signs that money is not your master, that money really is a tool, is when you're able to give it away and give it away sacrificially. Because when you freely and give something, you freely give something away. Whatever that is, it obviously has no hold on you. You might like the thing, but it's also like, I'll survive without it. It's a good test. It's challenging. It's challenging for me.
Thanks for listening. For more information about our church, visit SojournEast.com.